Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of the Vinny Eastwood Show. We have an unscheduled guest today. Incidentally, he sent me an email saying, look, I'm 83 years old and every day that I wake up is a new day, so we need to pre-record because I can't schedule it or anything like that. And, I was just like, well, bugger it, we'll just bring him on right now then. His name's Victor H. Fisher. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. This is, it was a surprise, a pleasant surprise for me to wake up this morning.
Yeah. I'm actually quite glad too, because I had two other scheduled guests and I had a pleasant surprise that they won't reply. So here we are. Would you be able to divulge a little bit about who you are and what you do, Victor, for the audience who don't know?
Well, I'm basically a scientist and engineer and many things. I really like to call myself a cyberneticist. In the purest sense, because most of my activity that I've done through my many years in research and engineering have been involved in control systems and looking at the large picture rather than counting angels on the head of the needle. But I recently, back in the early 60s, I was gifted to have a opportunity to do some research in the mental health area. It was just one of these types of situations that everything just sort of came together magically. How I got into that particular area was that I was involved in instrumentation, design, and utilization. And I joined Battelle Memorial Institute in Columbus, Ohio, which is still the largest research foundation, privately owned foundation in the world. While I was shortly after I joined them, my boss asked me to that he was interested in medical electronics instrumentation, and that I should spend some time and review the different types of equipment that it was being utilized at that time in the medical field. Shortly after, within just a few days, actually, I came across the electroencephalograph as being an instrument that appeared to me initially as being not working the way it was anticipated to work. Brought this to my boss's attention, and he said, "Well, why don't you look into it a little deeper?" So I went back to the drawing board, so to speak, and did a much more thorough investigation as to what type of data that or input that the electroencephalograph was getting from the brain and the nervous system. And it turned out that it appeared that the information was a series of pulses that all had exactly the same amplitude. And therefore, the the only thing that could transmit information would be the time period between pulses, which would be basically the frequency of these pulses. Because it from actual study analysis of nerve potentials, it was noted that the amplitude of the pulses were always exactly the same, but the frequency changed, and it changed interestingly enough as related to the intensity. So as a nerve receptor like the eye or ear or any of the sensory system would be stimulated, that the higher the level of stimulation generated a higher frequency. And then if in reverse, as the stimulation was reduced, the frequency would reduce. So that with that as a basis, it became very evident to me at that time to measure the frequency of these pulses. And so I, instead of the amplitude, and so I ended up with a frequency counting on a continuous basis, a streaming basis, frequency counting apparatus, instrument. And and shortly after I came to that kind of a conclusion, lo and behold, magically, we get a telephone call, Battelle does, from the mental hospital in Columbus, and that they wanted an instrument engineer to come out to their hospital and help one of the doctors with his instrumentation problems. And needless to say, I went out there and talked with this doctor. He was doing some using radioactive injections to see what kind of flow of blood flow in the human brain. He was trying to see if there was any correlation between blood flow and different mental problems. And he had some apparatus to measure this this dye, radioactive dye that he was injecting. And really, it was interesting to him, but then when I illustrated my thoughts about the electroencephalograph, not only he, but quite a few of the other psychiatrists there picked up on it and said, well, gee, this is what we want to do. We want to test your apparatus. And history was made or started just by this serendipity combination of desires. And so I took over a prototype just a couple days later, because I already had an idea what I wanted to do. And allowed me to hook into their electroencephalograph, pick up the same information, and work in parallel with their electroencephalograph and my equipment, which I ended up calling a hyperfrequency electroencephalograph, or a HIFREG short. But one of the things that we observed almost immediately was that the two hemispheres of the human brain had different patterns. What I mean by that, the frequencies was higher on one hemisphere than it was on the other hemisphere in corresponding areas, lateral areas. And we noticed that most of the patients that we had tested, even the first 25 patients that we tested, that we had almost, it was 100% correlation between this differential between the two hemispheres and their handedness. Subject that had a dominant left hemisphere were always right-handed. But interestingly enough, when we the opposite of that, when the right hemisphere was dominant, it would be a left-handed person, but we noticed that some of the subjects, and it was a small percentage, like 10% or so, would have a left-hand dominant hemisphere and be left-handed. But then when we observed closer, we noticed that those, what we finally call a pseudo-left-hander people, which Obama and Bush Jr. Represent. In fact, I think even Clinton was a pseudo left-hander. If you'll notice, when they sign with their left hand, their hand is twisted, it's sort of upside down. Instead of normally like you would write as a right-hander, your fingers are pointing away from you. In their case, their tips of their fingers are pointing towards their body. And in fact, they'll sometimes even turn the paper 90 degrees and they write uphill or away from themselves instead of across in front of themselves. And we saw that that was, again, another 100%er. I mean, we were able to pick out the pseudos right away. So starting with that as a beginning, which, interestingly enough, the standard electroencephalograph was not you didn't give any indication of handedness. In fact, they have what they called... it was a mirror image kind of a situation where with a standard electroencephalograph, like in epilepsy, mirror focus was the term that they'll say that the damaged area for the epilepsy would be on the right-hand side, and when they would go in to do brain surgery, it was actually on the left-hand side. mistake occurred almost exactly 50% of the time. So it was obvious that they were just guessing. They didn't get any real information from the electroencephalograph. In fact, I sort of term the standard electroencephalograph that is still being used today just a Ouija board. There's no real indication. In fact, actually, most of the modern electroencephalographs are not even measuring brain waves. They're measuring... what we call electromyelographs. They measure the impulses in the muscles on the surface of the skin, or just below the surface of the skin, and they're not even seeing anything that's coming from the from internal. When we did our research, we used needle electrodes, whereas they have sort of paste-on electrodes now. But the thing that we also noted was that with the needle electrodes, you could get in between the hair follicles. And when you did that, you're nowhere near a nerve ending, because it turns out that the hair follicle, where it, the hairs grow out of, has the nerve endings. And if you go into the space between hairs, they don't even feel anything. In fact, we in our sleep studies, they have needles stuck in their heads all night long. And needless to say, we did that with girls because they were more used to having stuff on their head while they're sleeping. And so that was whereas I think I would stay awake all night if they had me all hooked up with that stuff. But basically, what we did ran the tests on my equipment. We had 11 psychiatrists.
Doctor, hold on a second. We're about to come to break in just a second here. Okay. When we come back, I want you to kind of just hold that thought and continue going on. And this will be kind of like the way of the interview today. We're just going to kind of let you speak and lay out all your research, because there's quite a lot of it to do of your 83-year history. So, Victor H. Fisher, PhD, is my guest. He's a brain extraordinaire expert dude. And we'll be right back after the break. The Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the sexiest 2 hours in talk radio. And we're talking with the fabulous... are you a professor? I forget what to call people who've got a PhD. Victor H. Fisher.
Just a doctor.
Just a doctor.
Actually, the real doctors. The medical profession, they're not really doctors.
Yeah, well, I think a doctor's supposed to heal people, and based upon that thing, yeah, they're not real doctors. Anyway, if you've managed to hold your thought over the break, you've got a few more minutes to explain about the brain and how you can empirically decide via evidence whether or not somebody's left-handed or right-handed. I'm not 100% sure where you're going with it, but
well, what that indicated was that we were actually able to see the healthy tissue. And also in opposition to that, wherever we had a patient that had traumatic damage to their brain, we were able to see that immediately, where the standard electroencephalograph could only see epilepsy, and even there they never learned anything about epilepsy. Which we'll get into a little bit later when we talk about healing epilepsy. But how the program evolved after 100 patients were tested and reviewed, compared with their medical records, and we saw a very high correlation to various mental problems, mental health problems. We wrote up a report, and it was published by the Battelle Memorial Institute in their journal. And report was called the new window into the human brain. Caused a lot of excitement at that time. The journal American Medical Association picked up on it and described the and verified that this was breakthrough technology, that basically the concept of a sort of an FM method of detection compared to the standard electroencephalograph, which is more like an AM amplitude oriented system, that we were the first to come up with that concept. And interestingly enough, concept has been now established, but there has been no replication of our that I know of our original work, and that is sort of interesting in two different respects. One is that after that we did that 100, the state became very interested in our research. And especially since we had a unanimous vote of confidence from all of the psychiatric staff that this was breakthrough technology, that they allowed us a budget to build a research a laboratory, which I included steel shielded rooms so that we would eliminate any extraneous radioactivity or microwave activity, because the what we were measuring on the electroencephalograph was very, very small signals. And which had to be amplified many times over, but these rooms were so tight that you could take a little portable radio into the room and it was dead. It couldn't pick up any signal at all. And so we conducted 400 more tests in that room, and also we conducted six sleep studies all night. We ran both the equipment continuously for 8 hours through the night. And we learned an awful lot about that. And we also did some work by actually injecting some of the drugs that were being introduced at that time into the bloodstream and seeing the effects of these various drugs. After testing 500 subjects, we found that the technique of the clinical technique of evaluation of various mental problems, we were able to, the psychiatrists, our team was able to predict with almost 100% correctness what the equipment would tell us. We did a thorough double-blind experimentation where the operator of the Heifrig had no contact at all, really, physical contact with the subject, as well as never saw what the history was, the medical history was, which no electroencephalographer will ever give a reading until he reads or she reads the medical history. So they really just don't know what they're doing. We'll put it that way. It's just that cut and dry.
Those encephalographs, are those machines expensive?
Which, my equipment?
No. The other ones. The ones that you say don't know what they're doing.
Well, they're fairly expensive, but they're not, needless to say, they're not as expensive as some of the equipment that they're using now, like MRIs and CAT scans. Those are big bucks, millions of dollars, and they don't tell you anything. In fact, they do more damage than they give you any information on. Mm. Main reason for that is that all that they can do is illustrate what's going on in the memory system. It doesn't have any now. They've not been able to read. Get any data that tells. In fact, even handedness, you can't tell handedness with them. So if you can't do handedness, you're doing nothing. You're really. It's sort of like saying, "Well, I'm going to study what data is in your hard drive in your computer." Just looking at zeros and ones doesn't tell you anything. Especially, it doesn't tell you anything about the CPU, and it doesn't tell you anything about what's going on, where the CPU is located. From our study, we anticipate that there's at least 16 CPUs in the brain, human brain.
16 of them. Right.
Yeah.
What do you mean the 16 processors? Do they all do the same thing, or do they all have different processing functions?
Well, in one sense, they do exactly what a computer's CPU does, is just processes data. But it's they're in unique areas, like for rational thinking and anticipation. They're up in the anterior, up in the front part of the brain. In fact, it's almost in the temporal region, just behind or right near where the eyes are. There's two, one on each side there. Then for all of the, for visual, see, the problems you run into with the nervous system itself is that you have sensors, a sensory system for different things, eyes and ears and nose and touch and all those balance, which is actually the sixth sense. All of those things are fed by a bundle of nerves. Like, for instance, in the eyes, the optic nerve that goes back to the back part of the brain, the occipital area, has 1.25 million nerve fibers in each one, in each optic nerve. And so in normal way of hooking up, what we do in industry and what we do in computers is we tag a wire, both ends of the wire, so we know that this is this wire goes between this one area, one point, and goes to the other point. In these bundles, you have what we call synaptic areas. We have connections between neurons, and in the optic area, you might have 100 or 1,000 of these synaptics points. That is between the retina and the occipital of the back in the brain. So you have also a crosstalk problem. You have two fibers that are different areas, actual individual receptors, and you don't want them to have affect another nerve fiber that is adjacent to it. So this is why you have this pulse deal going on, because by pulsing it, we have like the FM radio, it cuts out static. And so the pulse is necessary to cut out crosstalk. But the problem you have at the other end is how do you hook up, which wire do you hook up to designate a certain area? Like when you looking at your microphone there, you don't see pieces of the microphone or your background or any pieces of the curtains or anything else like that. They're just floating around. Everything is continuous. The microphone is solid object and it has solid geometry, and your wire that to your earphones are connected. There's not pieces of it floating around. So that the only way that there can be a logic simulated from all these data points is through a CPU. What that does is it makes it analyzes on a context basis. That if you take like a doorway, if you take your hand and slide it up and down the doorway, you can that gives you a clue that edge is continuous, and so that gets fed back to the back part of the brain, and then says, well, these points should be adjacent to each other. So everything is now continuous. So basically, that's where you get the 16 different CPUs, because they have to reorganize. In fact, way back in at the turn of the 1900, they experimented with the eyes and put prisms in front of the eyes, like glasses with a prism, and the way they did this is that half of the visual field was flipped over, and so the bottom half of the eyeglasses you see normal, but the top half was flipped over, so the top was it was in the middle now, and the middle was at the top. Well, within a week, the brain accommodated to that new pattern of information, and everything was normal.
Well, that's interesting. It's quite adaptive that way. We're coming up to a break again now. Dr. Victor H. Fisher is a brain expert, and he is my guest today for 2 hours. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. I hope you like a jamming tune. I want to jam it. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to AmericanFreedomRadio.com. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and my very special guest today is Dr. Victor H. Fisher. Welcome back to the program. Now, what I've got to illustrate to the audience here is also you have quite an in-depth knowledge of not only the functions of the brain and its layout and all that, but also how humans behave. And one of the interesting conversations we had most was about how the difference between the male and the female brain operates. Would you be able to elaborate a little bit on that? Unless, of course, you'd like to continue along your original vein, and we'll touch on it next hour.
No, that's very, very interesting, because while you were during the break, I was anticipating talking about the difference between the male and the female brain. So you're reading my mind. So many thousand miles away. That's a very interesting subject, because there has been so much written about either the similarity or the differences between the male and the female brain. But being a cyberneticist, I look at the big picture instead of the narrow picture. It's always easier to design something complex. It's very difficult to design something that is very simple. And it takes a long time of tweaking to get something simple. What has happened in the since the start of psychology is to make the brain study very complex. And what we found was that it's extremely simple, and it has to be just from a genetic point of view, because the only source of input, the architecture, the design, and the manifestation, the physical manifestation of a person is contained with a pair of chromosomes. Many pairs of chromosomes in the single fertilized ova. So that is then divided, and then those are divided, and they are divided and multiplied, and finally you get a body, and you get a person and a brain. So the brain and the central nervous system is just a replication of many identical elements, because it's just it can't be complex. It's got to be very, very simple. So what the mistake that most people make is that they look at the brain as being some sort of a magical crystal ball, and they say, well, gee, the male and the female act differently. They behave differently, therefore their brains must be different. In reality, from our study, the brain is almost identical. The difference is not the brain, but the central nervous system itself. The female has a different role that she has demands made on her that the male does not have. And for her to fulfill her role, she has to have much more sensitivity to her environment, and not only her environment, but her offspring's environment. And where the male is a couch potato, when his wife would say, you know, watch the kids. He'll try to make an acknowledgement that he will, but that lasts a very short period of time, and the kids are on their own because he's just not wired, and that's really the proper way of describing it. He is not wired for that type of task.
I've noticed that. Men kind of thrive on interaction, whereas a lot of times childcare is just kind of sitting back and observing. And I'm just not that good at that. Much better when I'm actually interacting, you know, hands-on playing, that kind of thing.
No, it's in the case of the female, their visual view, their capability of seeing out the side of their head instead of with blinders that the male has on and can only see straight forward, offers a large amount of additional information in hearing. They can hear higher pitches and also lower intensity than the male of sound. In smelling, they smell much more sensitive than the male smells. Their taste is much more sensitive than the male. The touch, the feeling of touch, is much more sensitive. In virtually all of the five senses, the female is picking up and transmitting back into the brain many times more data than is going back to the male's brain. Now, this is all necessary so that the sensitivity is necessary so that she can be aware of potential problems, not only to herself but also to the offspring and their living conditions. The brain is still processing at the same rate, same speed, same amount of data can pass through it. So this is where we see the behavior changes, that the female is much more is processing much more data and has much more opportunity to come up with different conclusions based on this vast amount of new data, which she can go into information overload a lot faster than the male can. And so the male operates at less amount of data. Therefore, they can come to a conclusion very quickly, which is necessary if they get into an aggressive kind of a situation where the male is being attacked physically and or even mentally, that his fight or flight reflex has to be responsive very quickly. He can't analyze what to do. In fact, the training of a boxer is to make decisions faster than the brain can make those decisions. So it has to be secondhand. Literally, a boxer can be knocked out and still continue fighting because the conscious part of the brain can be shut down, and the training and condition reflexes that he has acquired during training allows him to still stay up on his feet and still continue fighting.
What happens if there's hormone changes or new hormones introduced? Like, you know how bisphenylalanine, the BPA in the plastic bottles and stuff like that, mimics estrogen in the body? Would that change a male's brain function?
The males or the females?
Males or females.
Well, the problem that you're running into right now is that the commercial area of both the food industry and everything associated with that, as well as the medicine industry, is to introduce toxic materials. Basically, plastic is cheap and it's easy to work with. And whereas in the days past, all your milk was always in glass bottles, and even your Coke and was glass, and which are totally non-toxic. So the what has happened is that we're now into a phase of trying to make people sick purposefully, because if you can make them sick, then you can glean some money from them. But if they're healthy, you can't get any money from them.
Yeah, there's just no money in healthy people these days.
That's right.
You know, I mean, health care. What is health care? It's not actually caring for your health. It's caring for the health of somebody's bank account, but certainly not yours.
That's right.
Yeah. Dr. Victor H. Fisher, brain expert, is my guest for the next hour as well, and we will be talking about a lot of interesting things. One element that I would like to explore as well is when you're moving house and the nesting syndrome, differences between males and females. Any man who's ever moved house with his missus knows that she starts going, it appears to the man as if she's going crazy. And Victor will be able to explain exactly why that happens, because of the intense nesting instinct. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.